Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome yourself in like a person coming to a cookout that wasn't invited. It's just about the time of the year where summer is gone. Pretty soon the trees will start to turn a little color, or at least they start to turn a different color. I'm Mark Elliott. Welcome to One Black Man Talk. As you know by now, we get together once a week, myself, Mr. D. Reese, Mr. Charles, and we share provocative talk that will explore the male perspective on life, love, and relationships. Basically, shooting for an honest self-evaluation, not shying away from some things that need to be said. And on that note, some things that need to be said, I want to bring this to our attention and talk about this first before we go any deeper in the show. Since September 9th of this year, 30,000 Haitian migrants have traveled through the waters seeking asylum in this country. Think about that for a second. 30,000 have tried to come into this country. And when they came across, trying to get across, in reality, they were treated like, some of them were treated like runaway slaves. And what I found to be interesting with all of that, we weren't hearing a lot of it, in a sense. They were spending more time talking about a woman, a young woman, in a sense that her boyfriend, she went away with her boyfriend, and they went out of town, and she didn't come back. And that seemed to have dominated the whole news media cycle, just that. And I'll be honest with you, that's nothing new. White women disappear all the time, but they tend to dominate the news cycle. But this right here kind of took a back seat, and it didn't really make the front page. It didn't make the digital press. You had to kind of almost search for it to kind of find out what's going on. Well, as of September 24th, those 30,000 Haitian migrants will be given a chance for asylum. And it wasn't until some news outlet was brave enough to basically show what's going on and the Biden administration decided to move on and do something different. So I wanted to start there because here's what we do, gentlemen. We don't run away from things that need to be said. We share, we speak out. And this is a great time to do so. Mr. DeMaurice, I'm going to bring you on first with this one, sir. Your thoughts, your reaction. And was the outrage when all this was taking place, was it strong enough?
I don't think so, man, because you're absolutely right. When you are of a darker hue trying to immigrate in this country or to come in this country because your country is under, you know, some of the poorest conditions, you see how this government treats people really, really, really dark. Now, you know how they treat, you know, Mexicans who are a little, you know, shade lighter than us. But when you are from countries that have people from the African diaspora, you're going to be treated this way. And I think, this is what I love about social media, because it was blasted all on social media where the news outlets could not ignore it. They could not ignore it. But they're trying to give us this narrative. And I'm sorry for the family of this white young lady who disappeared and who got killed, and they're still trying to find a boyfriend. But you have African-Americans, Latino, indigenous women who are getting killed and are missing all the time, and there's not that much energy on them. But this one woman, there's a whole bunch of energy where, and I think it's a diversion tactic, you know, to get everybody all, you know, swooped up into this story while ignoring other stories that are really important but not getting the news time that it deserves. And this is why, like I said, I love social media, because it was all over social media about the missing indigenous women, the missing African-American women, the missing Latino women, the women of color who have been snatched up and missing for years, not just all of a sudden, for years. And the photos and video of what they were doing on the border with these our Haitian brothers and sisters. So, you know, social media has its times where it's like, you know, it's doing a little bit too much, but it forced the news outlets to cover the story, or they were going to look really bad not covering it.
They always look bad anyway, in my opinion. Mr. Charles, what really caught my attention, and I didn't have to read some of it, but when I saw one of the I guess one of the guys on the horses, I can't think of his proper name, and I don't really care because to me you're a coward. But when he was running on the horse and had a whip in his hand, that imagery spoke millions to me, bro. It just did. And I'm sitting there thinking in my head, how the fuck is that going on in 2021? Realistically, how is that happening? That's the mind thing that I'm saying to myself. How? And as you spoke, Mr. Reese, I'm going to applaud the folks on social media that went out and brought it to the attention, because the realm of my social media, I didn't see much of it, bro. I really didn't. Because most of the people who I see on social media, we spending too much time trying to elevate ourselves, talking about what we're wearing, what we ate, whatever. That bullshit. So I ain't see a lot of it. But that one picture itself, for me, was like, what's going on here, Mr. Charles? What's going on, sir?
Well, for me, it was crazy. And I'm sitting there going like, okay, when they first said it, I was trying to figure out who it was when they talked about people trying to come across the border. Then I found out they were Haitian, and that even put my red flag up even more, because I'm like, well, normally there's certain other folks just a lighter hue that are at the borders often, right? And when I heard that, I said, okay. And I heard about the whip, and I saw the whip, and I'm like, that's crazy. But then I thought to myself, well, I've heard about people crossing the border and they've been shot and stuff like that too. I have never heard of, and I don't know if they don't do it with others or it's just coincidence or whatever. I've never heard of any other group that the Border Patrol were using whips on them. If they felt threatened, they might have shot them because they had guns or they shooting back. But I've never heard that before. Even with our Latino brothers and sisters, I never heard of anybody using a whip. And that caught my attention. I'm like, I mean, in one way or the other, it's wrong as hell when you're abusing people or whatever, but that just kind of caught my attention. Y'all using whips? So that was a bit much. And then you mentioned, too, about the young lady that went away with her boyfriend, and then we found out that evidently she had been killed, and they're still looking for him. Demon Reese brought up that point about the number of people missing over the years. I think it was like, I might be wrong, but it was like 700 over, 10 years or something in the same area of people that were still missing. Nobody even cares or tried to do anything about it. Or because of this young lady, she got out of love. 700, man, and they still don't know where the hell they at. I was like, okay. So yeah, it doesn't make sense. It's very disturbing, and you know, when it's close to home, it makes sense because you start wondering about things like that as to why and yeah, it's. But like you said, social media played a part because the administration had to jump on it quick because they was like, bruh, what the hell? You should have kept old boy. You know that's all they wait now. Damn, you ain't going to do that. We just kept old boy. At least he was getting stimulus. Anyway, that's my editorial comment. I'm going to leave that right there.
You know, it's interesting, man. And, you know, as you said, the administration jumped in and said they're going to, you know, talk about asylum with 30,000. But think about this for a second. Mr. Charles, you're in Ohio. I'm in Connecticut. DeMaurice, you in Illinois. I guarantee you, you can go to any 7-Eleven, go to any small, mid-sized hotel, and you're going to find a foreigner running it and owning it. And at one point, they came to this country the same way the Haitians were trying to come in. Giving money to start a business. Giving money to basically get on their foot. So do the same things with these 30,000 Haitians that are trying to get into this country. Because you can't tell me half these people that are running these damn 7-Elevens, Exxons, or whatever they are, Kugel, gas, whatever it is, all this nonsense gas, you don't know what you're putting in your gas tank, honestly. They weren't born in this country. At one point, they migrated here themselves. And I'm amazed. Maybe they're not dark enough. I'm amazed when every time Haitians try to come in, it's like we have no room at the border. Are you kidding me? So let's keep a close eye on this. It's good that the tension was swelled and outpour, came up, let's keep a close eye, because you know America basically will play games and send you a bill and don't pay the debt.
Well, can I say one more thing about this?
Help yourself, bro.
America is just not to blame of this. People who like to go to Paris and France and all that, France has been keeping Haiti in poverty for years. They have a debt with France that they cannot pay, and France doesn't lift one fucking finger to help Haiti. They claim it as their territory, but they do not help Haiti. So folks going to Paris and spending all that stuff and French products and stuff, take a look at that. The next time you want to go and fly to France and all that other stuff, how they treat their so-called colonies when they were colonizing all over the world. Haiti is one of them, and they put Haiti under a debt that they could never pay them back. And that's partly why Haiti is in the condition they're in right now. So the United States has done their part, but France has done this for centuries to that little country. And they haven't got their due diligence and blame for what they did to Haiti.
Good point, man. Thanks for bringing it to our attention. Gentlemen, we have a guest coming in this evening. I guess he's probably sitting to say to himself, what did I get myself into? These cats right here. I want to welcome in this young man, and he's a referee. He's an AAU referee. We're going to spend some time speaking on the dynamics between the young men and their parents, and the young girls and their parents, when they're basically stepping into sports, and some things that he have witnessed, and get some background that we may not be aware of when we're basically paying attention to these young kids developing themselves, trying to make it big into professional sports. With that being said, I want to welcome Mr. Hines to the program. Mr. Hines, welcome to When Black Men Talk. It's myself, Mark Hillard.
Hey, appreciate
Mr.
you,
Mr. Charles. I know, bro.
Appreciate you.
We appreciate you taking.
How you doing?
Oh man, I can speak for myself. I'm doing good. Besides my football picks, I'm still doing good.
Go Brown.
Okay.
Oh. show good already.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, boy, sir.
Besides, I'm going to start back because I look at refereeing myself. It's a thankless job. It's an important job, but it's a job that people just don't tend to kind of respect and understand the role. That being said, let's go back and find out how long you've been a referee, what kind of brought you to basically want to be a referee, and again, how do you feel when you're doing the job? And basically, I don't think probably after many games or when you're finished, people don't walk up to you, pat you on the back, and say, good job.
Well, I got started, man. I had an older son, and then from a previous relationship, and then my wife and I decided to have kids, and we end up overachieving. We had twins, so I went from one kid to three, and the child care costs, man, it just, you know, it was like a second mortgage payment, and we haven't even gotten into, you know, diapers, formula, clothes for two. You know, so it was, you know, I was trying to figure out how can I bring in some extra income. And I had some friends who were refereeing. They said, man, you'd be great. Give it a try. So I took the class and got out there, man, and found that I loved it. It's just, you know, I've always loved sports. So I come from a family of six boys, two girls. My dad was just that guy in the community that coached for like 30, 40 years that everybody knew. It was just like that community dad. So sports was just in my DNA. So I just I took to refereeing and I found that I could make a couple of dollars, and I was doing something that I really enjoyed. You mentioned about it being a thankless job. I tell you, man, people unfortunately don't understand, you know, you love your kid, but not everybody loves your kid. And it's not that a referee or official is hating on your kid or actually hates your kid. They're just making a call against your kid, but people tend to take that personally. Man, I was in the grocery store after doing some football games and had a lady roll up on me, bro, and say, yeah, you that ref that called the holding on my son. I'm like, man, but I'm buying grapes right now, and you're going to leave me alone. Like, it ain't that serious. But for some people, it's that serious, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, you brought to our attention, there was an incident that happened with a group of referees just recently, man, that, yeah, I want you to go and share with us, because this is kind of gives an idea what kind of refs may go through. So I'll allow you to tell us what happened after a game recently at, I believe you were one of the refs there as well, it was a group of referees that something took place after a game.
Yeah, here in Ohio, we do with Ohio High School football, we do six-man crews. And this crew is an all-black crew who were refereeing a game in the suburbs, the all-white school. And as they were coming off the field, the home team lost. They were upset. Their coaches starts berating the referees. And they just, you know, whatever, man, and blow them off. They get to the referee's locker room, because they were being evaluated that night. You know, when you're doing high school sports, you're evaluated as a crew.
Cool.
And they were being evaluated. And after the evaluation, the evaluator was trying to leave, and he realized he couldn't open the door. So somebody else got up and tried to open it. They couldn't open. They realized, like, wow. So they're like, three of them start banging. And then they realized somebody had put a vending machine in front of their door, the exit, and they couldn't get out. They were trapped in there, and it took a group effort for these brothers to get out of the locker room.
Wow.
Like, they were really held against their will about over a football game.
Yeah. I want to speak to when you said the parent saw you and she said about the holding. I think parents have lost sight of what sports should be for kids. When we came up, sports were a great way to kind of teach us about sportsmanship. It was a value that you learn when you lost. You learn to lose with pride. You learn to respect your competition. I mean, during the game, you know, you may want to take somebody's head off or do whatever you need to do, but when the game was over, you had a respect for the person that you competed against. And it seems to me now with parents, and I'm not that familiar with the AAU, and I kind of stay away for that reason, because to me, I know of some people that have their sons involved. And to me, they're looking at this as a possible way for their children to elevate themselves to where they could become pro and make big dollars. And I'm wondering, you know, you being a referee, if you stand back, does it seem like sportsmanship is still available or is around for these youth? And are their parents, I'm pretty sure the coaches now, based on, you know, how the coaches just basically treated you guys at a recent game, I don't think the coaches probably care anymore. But, you know, a lot of this stuff starts at home before I even get to the coaches. So I will put some of it, and I'll put the spotlight on the parents, because I'm wondering if they even notice or understand what sportsmanship is and what it should be.
You know, somewhere we got lost, man. We're in a time where, you know, we all probably came up in a time where you played two, three, four sports. You played multiple sports. And now people are specialized, having their kids specialized in the sport, and they're investing in trainers for a, you know, fifth, sixth graders, and believing that their kid has a quote unquote brand. So they're delusional, unfortunately. You know, like I said, we came up in a time where we played multiple sports and it helped us develop and understand sportsmanship, camaraderie, teamwork, all of these things. But you have parents now who are so caught up in their kid being the reason that the team wins. Not even that their team wins. They need their kid to be the reason that the team wins. So they're putting this undue pressure on a lot of these kids. And it's sad. It's unfortunate. This shouldn't be your child's ticket to college. So, like, Let's really focus on this academic piece and let your child get to school, get to college, because you save some money and you made sure that kid was academically sound and did well in the classroom. But it's our priorities. The priorities are really off.
Yeah, that's in the nail right head. I think when it comes to the priorities, they're more focused on the big long picture of the cash. It's about the cash, man. It's really about the cash. A lot of these parents aren't, they're not dumb to the fact that as their kids start to age, agents will come along and money will start to come. I remember working with a woman, and her son was he's going to college. He played football at this good high school in the state, and he did well. And he got drafted by a fairly nice-sized college that plays, you know, D1. And I remember one day she was talking, and she said to me, and I would have never – this kind of surprised me when she said this to me. She said, I told my son, if anybody ever offers you money, you take it. And I was like, wow. If anyone offers
you think about this.
Money.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But think about this. Think about
the
time we're in now. We're in the social media age. So some of it is some parents are living through their kids so that they can get, you know, more clout on social media, because it seems as if attention is like the biggest drug now. And they just want more attention for it, so they get this social media clout through their kids. It's, brother, when I tell you, it's sad. It's sad, man. I've done AAU girls third and fourth grade game, and I don't even understand why you got third and fourth graders playing AAU. You know, but third and fourth grade AAU girls, I had a tournament, and I was doing the game, and the parents were just going crazy, yelling at the kids. And, man, I got so mad, I stopped the game. If y'all don't leave these girls the hell alone, I'll clear this damn gym. I ain't care if the tournament director got mad. I ain't care if the parents or coaches got mad. I was just so disgusted with their behavior. I was just like, this is ridiculous. These are kids. One, they should be somewhere riding a bike and playing with their friends and enjoying their summer. They shouldn't be in the gym at third. They're not getting a scholarship offer in third and fourth grade. What are we doing?
Yeah.
What
it's
are we
sad.
Doing?
That's sad because that's the extreme pressure that parents are actually applying. And the system itself is kind of applying to these young kids. And they don't have a chance when you think about it. They're not growing up. They're not really fully growing up and developing. So let's just say they don't make it as far as they tend to go, and the education is lacking. What are they left with? Where are they? And it could be a sad thing. And I'm not even going to say it could be. It is a sad thing for a child to basically realize my parent, my mom or my dad, is basically attached to me based on my gift of trying to succeed at this. And they may never want to do that. They may not want to play the sport. But they realize that they get the love and attention from that parent because they're riding it. And, my question was going to be, you know, because I was going to ask, basically, do you see where the parents are driving these kids with so much pressure to the extreme? But with that example, you answer the question because you can't get more extreme than that. And like you said, the third and fourth-year-old girls, what sport are they playing in the first place? What sport are they basically designed to play at that age, third and fourth grade? I don't understand for most girls. I just don't get it. And one thing I noticed about girls, too, I've seen this where fathers may have had a daughter instead of having a son, and they turn that girl into being a jock. They literally turn her into being a jock. You watch her, she's playing basketball, she's doing this, and you're looking from a distance going, this cat wanted a son. And I'm wondering, we're all, you know, gentlemen here, so I'm going to put this, I'm going to start with you, Mr. Charles, I'm going to throw this question out to you, then come back to Mr. Hines. But what is it inside someone that takes someone that's smaller than you and you basically rob them of their natural ability to choose and do what they want to do? What does that say about that person?
I think it says, first of all, that oftentimes in those scenarios, those parents missed out on their childhood, or they thought they were going to make it, or they think that they can live vicariously through these kids. So I think that's what it says there. And it's just to that point where, you know, I've said 100 times, even on our other show, that everybody wants to be VIP, man. For real. Everybody wants to be VIP. They want to be in the VIP room. They want to be out there drinking the champagne. and they want to be popular, and a lot of parents are going that route. So I think that's what it is. But I mean, when we were coming up, man, things are, you know, were just totally different. I mean, you might add some of that too, but now these parents now, they literally are forcing kids to do this and play and things of that nature. But I don't know, man. But I think, to answer your question, I think a lot of these parents are trying to live through the children. So the children are seen as the meal ticket, unfortunately, even as early as the third and fourth grade.
Which is crazy. Mr. DeMaurice, I want to bring you in on this. What does it say about a parent, male or female, that basically take a child at a young point in their life, very impressionable, and kind of basically mold them into what they believe their child should do in the world of athletics?
I think Mr. Charles is right. It's about unfulfilled dreams and goals of that particular parent, and now they're trying to live vicariously through their child. If that child even has an inkling of a talent in the area that they have a passion for. But also, man, it's about to come up, I see. Because you see a lot of famous parents, of famous athletes who are in the spotlight. Remember the cornerback from Ohio State, Apple, and his mom and the notoriety she got. And there are a lot of parents like that who, you know, I'm going to get the limelight. I'm going to get some attention. I think the guest on the show is right. Attention is a drug. And so once you start getting that attention, you want more. And then it's about to come up. It's about, they're, you know, popping bottles and getting money and living, you know, large. And, you know, if my child could do that and I could push my child, they could say, thanks, mama, thanks, dad, and buy me a car, a house, and all that other stuff. So it's another way to kind of make it, but using the child's talent to do that. And so, yeah, I can see a lot of these parents just pushing their child to the brink to get that stardom. And there was a coach recently, I was watching a story, or I forget what station, where a player came to him and said, you know, and admitted, I don't want to play this game anymore. It was a football coach. And he applauded the young man and said, you know what, you shouldn't be playing if you don't want to play. And I'm pretty sure the parent was pushing that kid to play. And, you know, it's unfulfilled dreams, unfulfilled passion. I'm going to live vicariously through my child. Look at the ball father. You know, Lonzo and look at him. He never made it. I mean, I don't know where he played, but he raised sons to put him in the NBA. And to this day, I'm not sure Lonzo Ball wants to play. I'm not sure. He's a Chicago Bull now. I'm not sure if he really wants to play or how long he's going to play. But he got the courage enough to leave his father and say, you know what, I'm not letting you control my business anymore. And I applaud him for that. But a lot of these parents are just overbearing, man, and figure, hey, I put everything into you. You owe me. You owe me to do all this. And it's wrong.
You know, it was an old saying out I heard from time to time, man, and I'm sure we heard it as well. And it was like, if you want to hide something from a black person, put it in a book, because we don't pick books up and read them. Now, with that being said, I want to come back to you with this one, Mr. DeMaurice. You know, because we know you're a professor at a university, and your thing is education. Why is it that, you know, just a general question, but why is it that for us as a race of people, and some, you know, and I'm not going to say all of us, and it's sad I got to come out and say that, because somebody with that first thing, we say, well, you got it all. I'm not saying all, but it's a good proportion of us. We don't take the same energy towards education as we do trying to get our kids into sports. What's behind that?
We don't see the value of it. And some parents, I truly believe, they don't see the value in an education and how far that can take you. A lot of these parents didn't have an education for themselves. So how are they going to, you know, encourage or influence their child to get an education? And that's the way to go. I know with our parents, they didn't go very far in education. So they pushed us. Like, they saw the value that if you don't get this, it's going to be harder for you. So go to school. You know, do your homework. I mean, my mom and dad were on me all the time about doing that. And so they saw the value of that. And, I was playing sports, but they weren't, like, pushing, you know, to be a professional. They were like, you know, finish school, go to college. You go to college. I remember I got accepted to grad school, and my dad, I was thinking not to go because my dad got sick and go to Carolina. My aunt, his sister, put him on the phone because he wanted to talk to me. And like, don't you come down here. Go finish the job that you started in grad school. Then come down here. I'll be all right. So they saw the value of that. They saw the value of that. And I thank God that they did, because even when we didn't see it or I didn't see it, they saw it. And, you know, and I'm glad where I am today. You know, because of, you know, I'm at the spot I am because of education and pushing harder and valuing education. But some of the parents, they, you know, they don't value education. They don't value hard work. And it's the easy money. It's the easy come up. And they see everybody else kind of, you know, on social media kind of, you know, and they're all lying about, you know, I'm this, I'm that, I'm making this amount of money. And it's the easy come up. It's not about hard work, dedication, studying, investing in something. And because I look at school as an investment, because a lot of people look at school as you go to school and you put, no, I look at it, that's an investment in me. And so when I talk to young people, I'm like, don't think of the tuition as, oh, this is too expensive, I can't do it. No. How much are you willing to invest in you? So when you finish this, you know, you are better off than you were if you didn't. So it's an investment, and our people don't look at it as an investment.
Simple story, I'm going to come to you in a little bit, Mr. Hines, with the same question. But simple story I was thinking of, man, as you was talking about my pops years ago. Monday Night Football, you know, John Dandy, Meredith, Howard Cosell, and I can't think of that, Gifford, if I'm not mistaken, were on. And Monday Night, man, you can't miss Monday Night Football. So I would try to sneak, you know, at a certain time you had to go to sleep, and it just as Monday Night Football started, that was my bedtime. So I would close the door, turn the TV down low, and I'm trying to watch the game. And sure enough, here comes my father. Push the door open, boom, turn that TV up and go to sleep. But Dad, I want, no. And I always remember him saying this to me. And he only said it a couple of times, and at that point, it kind of kicked in, and I stopped doing that. He said, look, they have their education. They're making their money. You have to go get yours. So why are you sitting up watching them make their money when someday you need to go make your own money? So you're not doing them a favor, doing yourself a disservice, not a favor by sitting up late and not doing well in school tomorrow morning by watching them turn the TV on. And that, man, to me, was like, that was like dropping a brick on my head. It was. It was like dropping a brick. Even a young boy, I remember, it's kind of like dropping a brick. Like, yes, they have done theirs. I'm trying to go where I need to go. I got to go get mine. So the same question for you, Mr. Hines, is that why does it seem like, you know, parents, our parents, when I'm speaking of our parents that look like us, will take the energy, they'll run across town, they'll do what they got to do, they'll spend their money on all of this for athletics, but won't put that same energy, determination, blood, sweat, and tears when it comes down to education?
I think the brother hit it well, like that. Being exposed to education and higher education in particular, I live in Columbus, Ohio. I know people. I've lived here for about 25, 26 years or whatever. Man, I have friends who are from the city who, if you ask them to go to another part of the town, they don't know their way. They know their neighborhood, and that's it. Like they don't. And here you'd be in a city with multiple universities, especially the Ohio State University, and they don't even know anything about that. Like they should have been exposed to that. Should have been exposed to all of these universities, but they've never been exposed to that. And you know, a lot of people believe, you know, their kid is the greatest at whatever they do. So when they see their kid dribble a basketball, my son gonna be the next LeBron. He gonna be the next Kobe. They see him play football. I got the next Michael Vick. And they just focus. They think that is more attainable than a college degree because they don't understand about, you know, higher education.
It's sad because we basically stunt our dreams in a sense. We put all our dreams, for the most part, in a couple of baskets. One basket being sports, the other baskets being rap. Outside of that, we don't see the array of baskets where our dreams can go into. And a lot of times, that's where we push our kids to go. If it's not sports, it's in rap or, you know, basically singing. And those are, most of the times, are long pipe dreams that may never come to pass. This may not happen. Mr. Charles, I want to bring you in. It just seems like we don't value, and Mr. Marie said it earlier, we came up with our parents, man. That's one thing You know, if they didn't get theirs, they made sure that he was going to get yours because they knew what it took by them not having theirs, how much harder they had to work to prepare us to come out into the world. So it just seems like now, over the years, education doesn't carry status, doesn't carry value with us. Your response?
Yeah, well, I think part of it, to add on to that, is what people are exposed to. Because one thing we see, no matter what, with all the social media and on the news, we always see sports. Sports is glamorized, and you see these players, and they buy all the stuff, and you're on social media now with these accounts, and the parents are like, oh, look at this, look at that. You know, if you work real hard, you can be a good ball player. And if you don't make it to the pros, like in basketball, maybe you can go overseas. So they see that, and they don't see, I think, enough or pay attention to enough examples right in front of their face of successful individuals that are right there, and they just should pay attention more. But they don't, because what they see is now you can make a beat at your house. You don't need a studio, right? You can self-promote yourself. You can market yourself. And with TikTok and all these other things, you get enough hits. You could be a sensation overnight or over a couple months. So with all that being said, I think that's what it is. Like you said, our parents were different. You know, my dad had 10th grade education, man. He worked hard, blue-collar worker. But the one thing he always said, if you really want to do well and make it and be successful, you have to get some type of education or a trade or something. But he really was stressed in college because he said, I think that's the way you can go. And I never thought about college. Like I said, that's the farthest thing from my mind because I didn't think I was college ready. But, yeah, he kept doing it until he got his point across, and I tried it. But I think there are a lot of parents, again, that just don't see the examples in front of them, and Lord knows they're not going to look for them either.
I remember my son that's 19 now, that's basically he's in his sophomore year at a university here in the state and doing very well, very proud of him. But I remember when he was younger, the University of Yale was throwing free chess classes every Monday in this library in New Haven. So every Monday, 4:30, I would have him there, 3:30, have him there. And, you know, he was younger, so sometimes he didn't want to go. Now I would just make sure he was in there, and I wanted to learn the game of chess. Myself, I don't know chess, but I'd like to learn it at some point, but I don't think that may never happen. But I wanted him to be exposed to it. And I didn't even kind of tell him why. I just took him. Always just kind of took him and made him go. So there was a tournament one time. They had tournaments, and he did well in the tournament. So a few years later, we're riding in the car, and he said to me, Dad, I want to thank you for always taking me to chess. He said, at the time, I didn't understand why you were taking me, but he said, now I see. He said, allow me to open my mind up and think. And I said, there you go. I said, think about this for a second, though. I said, when we used to always go to chess, I said, Monday after Monday, were there kids there that looked like you? He said, no. He said, all the time, the bulk of the time, there were Chinese kids there. And I said, be prepared, because as you age in life, some things you shoot to go for, you're going to run into the same situation. That doesn't mean you don't belong there. You go there to get what you have to get, and you come out. But never let you think in the back of your mind, just because you walk around and you don't see someone that look like you, that's not a place for you to be. Determine what you need, what you have to receive, and you go get it. But coming back to you, Mr. Hines, you know, I was speaking earlier, and you shared about your son, and you said earlier that your son got into sports. Now, when your son got into sport, was that something that you guide him into, or that's something he chose on his own?
You know, I always had a love for ball, and I, you know, had a son, but at the time, I was still trying to get out there and get some rec in. So I would take him to the gym with me when we had a group of about 15 guys. We'd get together twice a week, play some ball. So I would take him with me, just like I would go when I was his age and go to the park with my older brothers and see them play and just sit there. And I couldn't wait till I got older to be able to play. And he got that bug. And he would just sit there, watch us play. And I tell you, from 3 years old, my son didn't have toys. He always had a ball in his hand, football or basketball. He always had something, whether he was seeing me
play pickup basketball or play softball, or I was even at the time still trying to play flag football. You know, unfortunately, check engine light came on in these knees, so I had to get that off. I was still, you know, I was still out there trying to play ball, and I would take him with me, and that's how I introduced him to it. I didn't want to push it on him, but I thought he'd fall for it just like I did. If I take him and he see me doing it, he gonna love this thing too, because I loved it. I genuinely love playing ball. I genuinely love sports. You know, that's not my only love, but I love it. You know.
Okay. When I was speaking, you share that this man to me was. It wasn't an eye-opener. It was like, yeah, we have to have this brother on. You're coming on regardless. But when you spoke of this and spoke of it so openly and candid, I'm like, yeah. Because that's one thing I love about this show, man. We come on and we're candid. We don't hide from things. We just drop it out there. And everyone don't have to agree. They don't have to like. But that's not why we speak. When a black man talks, he just speaks. He should be able to speak his mind. And we talked about this maybe a little bit last week. A lot of us sometimes think as black men, we should tone down our rhetoric or whatever, based on who's listening. I'm not buying that theory. But you spoke to me that your son had developed some mental health difficulties based on sports as he started to age, and he came to you and he spoke about it, and he dealt with it in certain ways. So if you don't mind, let's go into that. Let's go back to the beginning when he first may have brought it to your attention, and work from there up to current times, if you don't mind, sir.
You know, yeah, absolutely. So he probably in middle school, you know, he obviously started playing for his middle school team in basketball, and he was, you know, dealing with anxiety. But, you know, if I'm being honest, I'm going to keep it 100 with you fellas, man. I didn't understand what anxiety, what, you know, depression, any of those things were. You know, I came up, I tell people I was raised by wolves. I grew up in the hood, and we, you know, you were told how to feel. You all right, get up. Ain't nothing wrong with you. You okay. You know, I grew up like that. So in my mind, in my thinking, I'm trying to improve on parenting. So I just thought, I get what they were trying to do. They were trying to prepare me for the world, do the same thing with him. Hey, whatever it is, we're going to suck it up and keep going forward. So he was telling me, but I wasn't hearing. I was listening. I wasn't hearing. I just, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing. I was even trying to be deep and spiritual. Like, oh, we ain't claiming that. You know, that's crazy. I was not listening. I wasn't parenting well. And he got to, you know, he played ball. He's done really, really well. Started getting recruited. He had a great high school career, started as a freshman in high school, and that started varsity as a freshman in high school. That brought on a lot of anxiety, but he just kept persevering, because that's what I kept telling him, like, man, you all right, suck it up, be a dog. And he kept playing. You know, he got to his junior year, his team made it to the state semifinal, and he hit about three or four threes to bring his team back, and then he missed the three to win the game his junior year. And he was, you know, really kind of going through it, but I'm still not really hearing him, not listening. You know, had a great senior year, made it back to the state championship, man, and just had an incredible run where he set a state record where he didn't miss a shot, didn't miss a free throw in the state championship game, and then the offers start coming in from colleges. You know, he ended up selling on a Division II college here in Columbus, Ohio. But it really turned up once he got to college, the anxiety, the depression. And he called me one day before a practice, before a workout. And he was crying. I was like, man, what's wrong with you? He's like, Dad, I ain't doing good. And I finally heard him when he said that. I said, what's going on? And, you know, he broke it down, and I said, oh man. I said, you know what, I've always told you that you play basketball, but that ain't who you are. It's time for me to and really walk that walk. So let's figure out how to get you some help. I don't care about hoop. I care about you. I love you. I love you more than any ball, any team, any of that. So let's figure this out. So we, you know, got him some counseling, and it helped. And I even went to a counselor myself and started learning about what mental health issues and what anxiety was and how it all worked. And once I learned that, man, I felt great in that I finally understood, but I felt so horrible that I had failed my son. I felt like I had failed him because he had been telling me. But I wasn't, you know, thinking I'm helping him and telling him, you know, be strong and suck it up and all of that. But I wasn't helping him. But when I finally got it, I thank God I finally got it before it was too late. You know, and I thought back to all the times, you know, I could go back to seeing him play and just seeing him and remember, like, he was going through it. And I just didn't get it. And thankfully, you know, we're so close, even more. We've always been close, but we're really close now because I get it. You know, I get it, and I got you. So we, you know, we're going to face this thing. Whatever you need, I got you. Let's continue to get help. I'm going to continue to go, you know, and talk to somebody and because, you know, we all need to talk to a counselor, you know, and I want you to continue to go and you get help for that. I'll continue to go and learn about this mental health issues. And in the meantime, if I'm finding out that, hell, I got untreated traumas in my life, hell, I get some help myself. But we gonna figure this out. And, man, it's been such a blessing. It's been such a blessing. And I'm just so thankful that I finally heard him. I finally got it. Because that could have been bad, you know. If you get a call, let's say he may have, if he would have done something to himself or whatever it is, I'm just so glad I finally got it because I was not getting it, bro. I just really, in all honesty, man, I tell you, I felt like I failed him for a long time and thinking I was doing the right thing, but I was failing him.
Hey, bro, I know how I feel about just listening to you, man. You did a hell of a job, bro. Because some parents still don't get it, man. They still don't kind of pull back and look at the bigger picture. And you did. You were able to. You pulled back. And it's amazing because I'm listening to you and I'm saying to myself, people a lot of times in our background, our people, they want to downplay the role of a father. And there's no way we can sit here and listen to you and not fully understand the importance of a role of a father in a son's life. Our daughter as well, but he knew where to come. He knew when he wasn't feeling his best, he wasn't feeling right. He knew who to call. He knew who to reach out to. And he knew within you would do the right thing to help him, and you did. And we all commend you for that. I'm going to bring Mr. Charles in and get his response to what he just heard about Mr. Hines, spoke of his son, what he went through. Your reaction, Mr. Charles?
Well, I definitely applaud him for it because one is honesty and his honesty and his ability to discuss it, but also just the fact that no matter when he caught it or he understood it, that he was there to allow his son to really get the help that he needed, man. Because there are so many of us that, you know, we grew the way we grew up, as he said, we grew up, with wolves, bro. And we just had to deal. I think I've told you guys 100 times. You know, my dad, I wanted to play baseball when I was 11. I love baseball. Told my dad I wanted to play baseball. We had a park 5 minutes from our house. I'm like, cool, learn how to play baseball. He said, no. You got to learn to play where I played. I'm 11. So he takes me to this park, which is like 2.5 miles from our house. And we get over there. He takes me to practice and everything a couple of times. Then he said, well, I'm not taking you to practice anymore. So 5 miles round trip, bro. I had to ride my own bike to practice to the hood, bro. And they was like, we're going to steal your bike and all this other stuff. And I thought I knew how to play baseball. Bro, I learned how to play baseball. So that was hell, man. By yourself, didn't know somebody was going to snatch you up or whatever. But my dad was just like, you got to go. So to hear him, and it's totally different because we live in a different time, but to hear Mr. Hines mention that what he said about it, about his child, and then recognizing that he was had a plea for help, and I can tell you, having some familiarity with the situation, his son was a is a hell of a basketball player, and he's definitely worthy of scholarship offers. But I still applaud him because at the end of the day, it's about the mental health of our young people and our families more than it is about drilling a damn basketball. So I definitely applaud him for that.
Your response, Mr. DeMaurice, to Mr. Hines is what he's just shared with us, sir. And it's not easy to share, so we want to thank him twice, three times, four times, bro, because it's not easy. I'm just thankful that we have an outlet, man, that for the past several years, we have allowed ourselves to have this outlet where people come on, and I'm surprised at how sometimes people come up there, how comfortable they get, and they open up. But I'm amazed and I'm happy for it because we need outlets where we can go and just open up and just let things flow and share. So that being said, Mr. DeMaurice, your response, sir?
Yeah, definitely commend you, Mr. Hines. It takes a man to do that. It takes a true man to do that, to put away all the pride. And you know in our community it's the stigma of needing mental health services that sometimes keeps us away from that. We don't want to be thought of as crazy and all that other stuff. But you put all that aside, bruh, and you stepped up. And that's a true man. That's the testament of a true man to say, you know, I love my son so much, it doesn't matter if he's not the next Michael Jordan or whoever, and that he has this opportunity. No, I love you, and basketball is not you. I love you, and this is what we're going to do to make sure that you are more than okay. So it took, you know, that's the heart of a man. That's the heart of a man, and that's the heart of a father. And I truly commend you for doing that because I don't think too many parents would have done that, especially fathers would have done that, because they probably didn't want to deal with, you know, that something mentally could go awry with someone or deal with the stigma of having a child or a son going through that and, you know, and afraid of what people will say and all that other stuff. But, no, you stepped up. And you said, you know, I'm going to be a man to, and a father to my son. And kudos, bro. Kudos. Love it.
I appreciate that. Appreciate it.
I'm going to say something, man, that I was thinking that came to my mind when you were speaking. And it's just interesting because this gentleman I'm going to bring out, he's well-loved. Tony Dungy lost his son years ago. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
I remember that happened, saying to myself, how, I mean, you know, Tony's a big man of faith, you know, and those things of that nature. And I'm saying to myself, how is his son taking this life and his father's Tony Dungy? And if I had to kind of put it together, Tony probably just wasn't there for him. Because, you know, the NFL basically sucks up a lot of your time, you know, a lot of what you need to do. He's probably on the road a lot. And maybe he just wasn't there enough for his son to understand, or maybe his son might have felt an array of different things. He was living up to his father's expectations, what the case may be. But I remember thinking that when that happened, and I'm going to move to another scenario, man. Andy Reid, one of a lot of people, and I'm just throwing names out of things that happened. I'm not trying to basically throw anything on them, but when we talk, we talk. Andy Reid several years ago was the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think he had three boys or two boys. And come to find out, both of his boys were basically running drugs. And one of them got caught basically being high, crashed the vehicle, did some damage, stuff of that nature, and was in jail. And shortly after, Andy Reid lost his job with the Philadelphia Eagles. I remember talking to some Eagles fans, and I'm like, Andy Reid needed to step away from coaching and handle his family. Shortly after, he popped up at the job at Kansas City Chiefs. And he popped up, and here you go. He starts the job, and he's running. And let's face it, Andy Reid has won a Super Bowl recently, in the past year or two. And I said to you about a week ago, Mr. DeMaurice, and I think Mr. Charlton, I heard it, I said that Andy Reid just doesn't look good. He just doesn't look good. And come to find out today, when the Kansas City Chiefs lost, they had to take him to the hospital. And I remember texting that to you gentlemen about that. And, Mr. Charles, I want you to basically, if you don't mind, say what you text after I text about Andy Reid going to the hospital.
Yeah, I just texted that his son, one of his sons was hired as a coach or a special assistant to Kansas City when he took that job. And he had another issue. He had an issue where he was drunk and he ran into some folks on the side of the road and severely hurt a young lady. I don't know, she's paralyzed. She almost died. And this was not too long ago. And he was still up for trial. I'm not sure what the end result was, but that was very much trauma for him, Andy Reid, as well. So, yeah, that's what it is. So all of these things with his son and his family, and he's still trying to put on a good face that he's still the head coach of Kansas City. So, yeah, and I think they're still waiting to see what the final result is going to happen with his son.
There it is. And that's the thing. That's the pattern. At what point? And I'm not trying to call Andy Reid out, but Andy, he's a man like the rest of us. At what point did Andy have to cry and tend to his family and tend to his sons? He kept chasing what? The Super Bowl trophy. He kept chasing that. And sons need father's attention, bro. And me being a father of a son and two daughters, I can tell you, your kids, no matter what age they – I have a daughter that's 41, 42. Just because they return 18, 19, they don't stop needing you. They don't stop coming back to you. They don't stop wanting something from you of being a parent to them. So it's not that they get to a certain age and you feel like, you know what, you can vote now, you can go to Army, whatever the case may be, I stop being a parent. Being a parent, basically, once that child is conceived from your sperm, you never stop being a dad. You never turn that light off. That switch doesn't go off, I'm here to tell you. And if you're chasing things that don't allow you or get in the way of what you really should be doing, because we're put here for a reason, we won't believe it or not. We find things that make us happy, to satisfy us, whatever the case may be. But as a man, we're put here to produce and bring other children to this world. That's a big part of the reason why we're here. And when you neglect those duties, sometimes things go awry. Gentlemen, we're going to take a little short break. I want to thank you, Mr. Hines, for being here and sharing your story, sharing the work that you do and the dynamics that goes on being a referee. I'm going to ask you, brother, to hang out because at this point what we do is we kind of throw some questions around for Mr. Charles, Mr. DeReese. You may have a question yourself, and it can get kind of dicey and it can get kind of interesting. But hang out, bro, because you're good people. We like good people here.
All right.
Let's take a little short break. It's When Black Men Talk, Mr. DeReese, Mr. Charles, Mr. Elliott, and Mr. Hines. We'll be back in a second. Based on the question last week, Mr. Dream Maurice, I know you've probably been courting all week, my brother. Outside of that, man, if you got a question, if you got a question for us, man, please, I'd love to hear it.
I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday, briefly. I've been looking at the R. Kelly trial, not really intensely, but, you know, just kind of reading the reports and what's happening. The defense, I guess his defense team didn't really have much to defend, and they rest their case very early, and they're in deliberation now. And I know that after this court case is settled, he has one in Chicago. This one is in New York currently. He has to come to Chicago to face some charges. Just wanted to get everybody's opinion of what they thought of or what they think about this particular case going on.
Let me just say this, man. I always notice this with us that amass a fortune, in a sense. We believe, and us that may not have the fortune, we believe that you can go out here and do what you want in this world. And if you can hire a high enough price attorney, that they're going to get you out. And partly we believe that because we're ignorant to the fact of the rules and the laws of this country. And then we're kind of ignorant to the fact that we believe that other people get away with stuff, we're going to get away with it too. So you say to me, R. Kelly basically his lawyer didn't put up a defense. He had no defense, bro. He had none. So his lawyer is basically taking his money. That's what's really going down. I'm going to give this quick example, and I'm going to bring Mr. Charles in to answer this, because I don't really have an answer for that, bro. I don't even really want to talk about Mr. R. Kelly, because to me, that brother is on something totally different. But real quick, I remember Ray Allen played basketball for UConn. Ray Allen bought a house in, when I say this, really upscale suburban area of Connecticut. And he really was never there. Ray Allen bought these two big pit bulls. And it would leave them outside. And the pit bulls would bark basically all night. Just bark. So the residents in that area approached him and said, hey, it's a city ordinance. Your dogs are barking. Can you bring them inside? You ain't telling me what to do with my dogs, back and forth. Now, so they filed a court petition against him about his dogs barking. Do you know this man went and hired the man that represent O.J. Simpson? Johnny Cochran, to come fight this city ordinance.
Oh, boy.
Yes, sir. And Johnny showed up. Johnny knew. Why wouldn't he? You know how much money Johnny, and it was shortly after O.J. Simpson trial. Johnny came there, opened up his wallet, took that money, and left the state of Connecticut. So with that, I rest my case, and I pass that question on to Mr. Trump.
Hey, Johnny was about that cash, too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was. Yeah. I mean, you know, opportunity, he had to eat, too. But the R. Kelly situation is bizarre as hell to me, man, because I think sometimes, as we said, that when you mentioned earlier, when people have money and they made it, they think that they can get off and do whatever, and they're going to they are immune to being prosecuted. But what they were with signing out in this situation, I think, is that works for some people, not for everybody, because in this situation, it appears as if everything has been put out there for on R. Kelly and stuff we didn't even know about has been exposed, and to this point now where it's like, I don't know, man. I don't see if he has a way out. If he does have a way out, it's a miracle. I think they have everything they had to prosecute that man and send him to prison. So it's been exposed. So I'm not sure what's going to happen, but that's how I see it. I don't see any other way unless the jury decides they want to see something different. I do find it ironic, though. I did see the jury. I saw the jury numbers. I think there's 7 men and 5 women on the jury. So I'm interested to see, does that play a part in it as to what the jury comes back with and what they decide about the charges against R. Kelly.
Mr. Hunt, your response to the question, sir?
And I got to tell you, I love the brother's music. I think he is a genius musically. But I can't – I have a daughter, man, and I consider myself a protector of black women. And you just can't do the things he did. I mean, there's videotape of the things he's done to young black girls. And if we co-signing and still continue to support him, come on, man. Like, the things he was doing was just so disgusting and so horrible. And the people, I'm so frustrated by him. I'm frustrated by the people, his handlers. Like, all
yeah.
those people around him, just they knew he wasn't right to the point where this man had a sickness. And as long as that money was flowing, y'all just looked the other way. I'm not okay with that. Because, again, we're talking about black women, young black women. Come on. The money can't be that good. Like, I believe sometimes you do got to knock somebody's hustle. It ain't okay to just be quiet all the time. You know, we can't just always look the other way and mind our business. When it's wrong, it don't make you a snitch. Like, you got to stand up. You got to stand on something.
You bring up an interesting point, Mr. Hunt. I want to just tap into it real quick because we assume as black men, and I hear you, and I believe in the same thing, that we should be protecting our own, our women. But I'm going to throw this question out there. If you were a Martian coming in from Mars and you watch the way black men respond to black women, the way they talk about them in their music, the way they portray themselves, the way they approach them, the way they speak to them, what would be the reaction of the Martian to how does black men really feel about black women? I'm going to come to you first with that, since you're the guest. Your response.
They would absolutely think that we hated our women. I mean, and you know, somewhere along the line, we got away from respect and reverence. You turn on the radio now, you won't hear a ballad. You won't hear nobody singing about love. Yeah, and I'm not one of them people who back in the day everything was greater and better, because we had folks singing about some crazy stuff. You know, M2 May was singing about the side piece and all that whole thing, but it was subtle. You know, it's a difference in how things are done. But we also had people singing about love and talking about love. And now they're not there. Like, there's no shame in our young people. There's no shame and there's no reverence in our young people. They don't care. So it's even worse now. So anybody who, you know, from some other world or Martians, whatever, came in and saw what we were doing now and how we interact, they wouldn't see the love that they should see. I know we used to have it, but it's on the decline.
Mr. Charles, remember a few weeks ago or a few months ago, Mr. DeReese thought there was actually some Martians hanging around. He kind of bought into when I think the quarterback from Cleveland said he saw a spaceship. Mr. DeReese kind of believed him.
I'm surprised people haven't really kind of got on him about that. Mm-hmm. Everybody forgot about that.
Exactly. You know,
that's what wins. That's what wins do, baby. That's what wins do when you win. Everybody you did what you do.
All depends what that one is doing tonight. That's what all depends on that one is doing before he says something like that. But Mr. Charles, the same question to you. You know, if a Martian wants to come in, man, and just take a look how our women are handled, treated, spoke of, what would be their reaction?
I think they would be either probably shocked, because they would probably be thinking about a group that are of the same ilk, right? Same backgrounds and whatnot, and how they treat each other. And they would go, well, normally, by what we've seen in the past, you know, you stay with these people ought to stay with their own kind, and they kind of, when they stay with their own kind, they also treat each other well because they're family, right? So I think they would be a little appalled, because they'd be looking at other groups and comparing them and saying, well, hell, they take care of one another. But oftentimes, that's not the case when it comes to the way that we treat our women.
Your reaction, Mr. DeMaurice? Good point, Mr. Charles, because I do notice that. Real quick, I'll just say that I noticed that the other groups, man, I've been around white guys, when they're talking about their women, they'll whisper. They don't even talk loud. I'm trying to say, bro, we could talk, but they kind of will bring it down. Very seldom you hear them speak of their women in a loud fashion and just totally disrespect and just have no care or concern for them. Your reaction, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, I can go along with the other two brothers. It's probably that we hate them, that we don't like them, that they're second class or third class citizens, that they're not worth anything. It would probably perplex them about, you know, how we treat the opposite sex who is of our ethnicity. And so it would probably just make them kind of just ponder and think, you know, what's happening here? Why are they treating them that way? And trying to probe and trying to figure out, you know, why is this? Because in any other species, it doesn't happen. It really doesn't happen. You look at the animal kingdom, it really doesn't happen. And so why is it happening here with this particular group?
Mr. Hines, you have a question I'd like to put out to us, sir.
I would like to kind of go back on something you said. I think it's something really important. You were talking about fathers. And, man, I tell you, I think about my dad, and I was fortunate to have my father
in my life, and my father was just the community dad, the neighborhood dad, everybody's dad. And I was blessed to share my father with everyone. And I was telling, my wife about, it's just something about when the father shows up. I used to cut up, but, be in the neighborhood with my friends. But when my dad came around, I got it all the way together. And everybody around me got it all the way together because they understood they were in the presence of a man. How do we get that back where this men are men again? And we take control of our community.
I'm going to say this real quick, man. I want to leave a lot of room for Mr. David Reese, Mr. Charles to speak. As first, we got to show up. And I say that, and I'm going to give a quick example behind that. I remember, my son, when he was younger, he was he had to play an instrument. And I remember having to go to one of the nights to chaperone. The teacher asked me to come chaperone. She said, we need, a male figure. You ain't got to say any more than that. I'm there. So my son, then came too kind to come. I said, if you're not doing anything wrong, you won't even know I'm there. So I was at this room, had to keep all the boys kind of in this one room, and one kid kept going. And I said, look, the next time you go to that door, you're not coming back in. Sure enough, he tested me, went out, I ain't letting him back in. You don't know, you're not coming back in. So they had a field trip about a week later, got invited to go, took off from work, I'm there. So after a short period of time, I, always show up to the school. These young men that saw me as the heavy hand started walking up to me every time I came to school, shaking my hand. How you doing, Marcus, Dad? How you doing, Marcus, Dad? Look at me square in my eyes. I'm looking like, whoa. Because I'm saying to myself, whoa, that's what they want, bro. They just want somebody to show up and show them, even if it's rough love or tough love, showing them love. That's simple. I mean, I can't speak how many times I'm at the school or was at the school, and it's teachers night, whatever. I'm one of the few males there. The mother's there, and they got husbands. What's up? I mean, really, what is up? So it's like we have to be present. Damn near all the time, we got to show up. And just like you said, your father knew if he walked in the area, he knew what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you, man, I think my father beat me once my entire life, if that happened. Most of the time, my father had to, if he started to take, like, he was going to take his belt off, that was enough. So it's like, I had to, my mother whooped my ass plenty of times. It is what it is, but that's what a father, and that's what men represent. True, hardcore black men, that's what we represent. When we're doing it right, show up. Show up. The first part is just showing up. Your response, Mr. Charles.
Yeah, I agree with that. Showing up, but also it's commanding respect and setting examples. Because when you come into a room or wherever you're at, kids are watching. And granted, you may not even be connected to a kid, but as Mr. Hines said, that his father, everybody knew his dad. His dad was everybody's father. And it's about command and respect, and it's to a point where if a kid that you may not even know may be doing something that's out of turn, you can either look at a kid or you can just kind of, give them a look that you're paying attention, and you'll see where sometimes they'll just kind of chill out and relax. But we gotta do that. We also got to command respect, but we got to set an example as to something they can follow. And they go, well, okay, I see this, and this is what I want to be, because oftentimes kids that don't have good examples follow bad examples because they're still looking for somebody to care or pay attention to them.
Mr. D. Maurice, I want to bring you in on this, but yeah, man, we really need to, as men, we have to step up and take a stronger role, because we can all find things wrong with our community, but who's going to fix it other than the black man? There's no crowd coming in. There's no cavalry coming in to fix what ails us than us. We have to step up and play a role. Your response, Stephen Riss.
Yeah, I agree with everything you all said. And one of the things I think that gets left out, we have to learn who we are and whose we are. And I think if we knew our history, we know who we are, whatever, whoever you decide to pray to, that higher power, to guide us as men, to take our rightful space and place in the lives and our loved ones in the community. And I don't think we do that. The other thing is that we don't realize as men and how we validate our sons and daughters. We validate them. And I'll tell you a quick story real quick. I remember my ex-wife used to get my daughter's hair done all the time. And as soon as she would get her hair done, her mom would say, oh, you look so pretty and all that stuff. And it was like her mother wasn't saying anything to her. As soon as I walk in the door, my daughter comes up to me and like, Daddy, do I look pretty? I'm like, yes, you do. You're the prettiest girl in the world. And my ex-wife would just hit the roof. Like, I've been telling her she's pretty all day. And you can come in and just kind of just sweep her off her feet. And she look at her. She's floating on a cloud because you said you're pretty. We validate. We validate through our actions, our words, and our actions. And they're 25 and 24 years old now. And every time I'm around them or I'm around their friends or colleagues or something, they're like, oh, you're Mr. Whitehill? It's a pleasure to meet you. And they're like in reverence and so respectful. And I'm wondering, what is my son and daughter telling them for them to get all this respect from people that I have never met yet? And so maybe it's something that I've done or their mother have done or somebody has done where they have that presentation where they are productive citizens or good people, and they're looking at you as you're responsible for this. So we have to really learn our place and learn that we validate our sons and daughters. What we do and the examples we set, really kind of sets the course for them to, you know, live a good and clean life.
Absolutely. Ms. Hines, your response to your question, sir?
Man, I think he just nailed it. He hit it right on the head. I'm fortunate enough. I have I told you guys I have twins. I have boy-girl twins. So I have, my daughter. And, as often as I can, I'm telling her, I'm saying, how's the prettiest girl in the world? How's my favorite girl? And my wife said the same thing. If I say it means something, man. Like we said, when the father shows up, bro, it's different. It's different, man. And we just got to understand our place and the power that we have as men, as black men in particular. What we mean to our families, what we mean to our kids, what we mean to our communities. It's just, man, it's so important, and I hope we improve, there's a lot of us out there, and it's a thankless job. It's almost like refereeing or being the offensive lineman. It's a thankless job, but we got to do it. We have to do it.
I'm gonna make this point now because I want to come back, and I want to do a show where the main topic is why a father's not there. And, we all can have our opinion and speak on that. So we'll set a date for it in the near future where that'll be the topic of the show. Because whether we want to be honest about it and admit it, there's a lot of them are not there. And why they're not there. And there's an array of dumb excuses, but we need to put that out there and be the focus of it. Because to me, a lot of times I say this, when that comes up, sometimes we get a little squeamish because we don't want to really air our laundry or dirty, but it is what it is. Because I can't speak to how many people I know as adults that don't know who their father might be. Mm. But know him, only seen him once. How is a grown man my age only seen his father two times in his life? How did it happen? How does that happen? Sometimes they live in the same state, same city. So we'll put that together at some point within the next month or so, where we really just do a show where we just kind of comment on why we think that is. And I'm sure we have enough to basically speak on to put together a good show behind that. Mr. Charles, I think you had a question earlier, if I'm not mistaken. I got to go to DeMaurice now, if I'm not correct. DeMaurice, your question, sir? No, I'm sorry. Mr. Charles didn't have a question yet. Mr. Charles, your question.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on what Mr. Hines mentioned about the type of parents that we're seeing via AAU. programs. Question is out there is, why do we think parents are so gullible when it comes to their children? We hear about these AAU coaches who have these sponsors, and they say you got to play for the right AAU team, or they have to do certain things for their children to be seen and maybe excel on the next level.
Because you're looking for someone to get you where you want to be. And this is, you know, kind of harsh to say. We look at the doctor that was at Michigan State. They had the chance to basically abuse all the young women that he was able to abuse. And you wonder to yourself, you know, how was that able to continue on with girl after girl after girl? Because these parents were looking to get their child where they looked at him as being a tool to get them there. I'm sorry, man. I am no way, sure, form or fashion, especially a daughter, even my kids, going to be in another room while you're examining my kids. And I'm not trying to throw a hot grease on these parents, but it is what it is. So, but if they made it seem like this is what you got to do for your kids to excel to get here, there goes your gullibleness. They play into your expectations, what you're trying to get, what you're trying to achieve. They play into that. So you release the reins and you let it go because you're thinking in the long run, this is what I need to do to get X, Y, Z. And that is not the case at all. Your response, Mr. Hines.
You know, I think we're in a time where people lose perspective and just have this false reality. They just can't see what's real, what's right in front of them. Sometimes, you know, they want to believe, oh, my child is the greatest. You know, I remember back in the day, you take, you know, baby around the older folks, the elders just, their honesty was just, it was just beautiful, and it was brutal. You know, you bring an ugly baby around an older person, they just say, bless their heart. They won't call the baby ugly, they just say, bless their heart. But they kept it real. you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
Like, people have a hard time with reality. Like they spending all this money and doing all these things to push this, whatever it is, on their child, and the child might not even be good. And the child may not even be really interested in that, but that's what the parent wants. But, yeah, sometimes people don't have a realistic view of their kids because they love their kids so much. But like I said previously, everybody don't love your kid like you love your kid. You know, you think your kid is Kobe. Your kid ain't that good. I don't hate your kid, but he's just not that good. I'm not hating on him, and he's not being slept on. I'm just giving you an honest assessment. He's just not that good. But it's hard for people to hear that. They don't want to believe that. As long as you, like, if my kid has a bad game, he has a bad game. And that's nobody's fault. If my kid's an asshole, that's on me. That's what we're missing, man. People just, they don't want to be real about their kids, about even themselves sometimes.
You're right about the kid being an asshole, bro, because I know when I was younger, you know, I know we keep going back to our youngerness, but you're afraid to do things to bring embarrassment or shame to your mom or your dad, bro. You was ashamed because you knew when something happened. If something happened that was out of pocket, before you got home, your mom and dad knew about it. They knew. And let's think back then, there was no cell phones, nothing else, but your mom and dad found a way before you walk through the door, to know that you did something that they weren't appreciative of. And that's it. No one, you know, parents basically now, their kid can do wrong. They go to battle for them. Your response to the question, Mr. DeMaurice?
Yeah, you keep talking about kids. That's now, man. I can go to North Carolina now, go to a store, and somebody will recognize me. They won't know. I won't know them. They'll look at me and keep staring at me, and they'll go, you one of them wide old boys, ain't you? And I'm like, yes, ma'am. I knew it. Said, who your daddy? Such and such. Yeah, I know. My dad's nickname is T.D. I know T.D. and Stumpy, and my uncle's nickname is Stumpy. And tell him I said hi when you see him. Yes, ma'am. You know, it's now. I'm in my 50s, and it's still now. You can't embarrass your family out there. But I think, you know, we love our children so much. When we have our children, we think any little thing they do, any little talent they have, if they show it, you know, it's the best in the world. And sometimes that blurs our view of what's really reality. and that they're not that talented, but you want them to be. You want them to be the best of anything they want to be, and sometimes those lines get blurred where that kind of overrides the reality of what the child really is and your son and daughter really is. And it's not until you get a rude awakening that you get, you know, that reality check that, no, your child's not that special. There's somebody better. I remember my father used to tell me that sometimes. Sometimes I'll have a good game or do something well, and my dad said, no matter what, there's always somebody that come along that's better than you. And I used to think he was just dogging me. But he was right. So you got to work hard. And
yes,
he,
sir.
You know, because he was my, and Mark knows my dad, and Charles, you know, you met my pop on several occasions via, you know, Zoom and stuff like that. But Pop, he will dwell on the reality of the situation. Like, yeah, don't get the big head. You got to do this. You got to do that. I think you're good, but here's somebody better. So I think we get some parents just love to live in the unrealistic world that their children are the cream of the crop and the best of the best, when in reality it's not happening.
Mr. Charles, very good question, sir. But your time to
Thanks.
Show up and answer it and answer it.
Yeah, just real quick, I think that a lot of people, they get caught up again in that wanting to be VIP, wanting to be so successful that they really forget to realize the examples that have superseded what they've been trying to do. I tell kids and their parents all the time, quit buying into this stuff, these examples that somebody has to take you there. When you think about in basketball, Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman, they were found. They were found in southeastern Oklahoma, right, and other places. So central, you know, it was a central Arkansas. If they were found, if your kid's good enough, they will find you. You don't have to worry about that. They just have to keep working hard. But to buy into you got to play for this team or whatever, I think it's overrated and oftentimes bogus.
Gentlemen, we got a couple minutes left. What we're going to do here is I'm going to throw a question out and get each one of the answer it. Mr. Hines, you may not want to answer this. You stated you're married, so this may not be safe for you to venture into this one. But you answer this at your own discretion. But the
okay.
question is, what woman out here, a celebrity woman out here, that can get your paycheck? Now, before you answer, Mr. Charles, Mr. DeMaurice, I don't want Snow Samara Lathan. We don't set her. No Pam Grier. No Phyllis Hyman. They're off the table. So I'll come to you first, Mr. Charles. She can have your paycheck, bro.
Well, wow, that's deep. I'm trying to think. There's so many beautiful ladies out there. Not like she needs my paycheck, but I'm taking her first, and I'm not sharing it. Miss Parker, Candace Parker, she can get it. She can get right there tonight. Cause she a true baller and a ballerette, and she proving it with their team going to the semifinals. She just, oh, man, just her overall makeup. She's beautiful. And then the fact that just her mindset, strong as heck. So, yeah, she don't need my check, but she can sure get it.
We got 60 seconds left. Mr. DeMaurice, your choice, sir.
All right, it was going to be Riri, but Riri just broke my heart. Rihanna, you broke my heart, baby. You broke my heart. I could have got past a knucklehead, an ASAP, rockhead, whatever you – but you know, but the latest news about her, nah, I can't do it. But I got to go with Malika Andrews off ESPN. Oh, man. Oh, Malika Andrews. Mm. Oh, my goodness. Mm. Oh, my goodness.
Well,
I sit at
well, it's big girl.
She wanted me to.
It is big girl season, so I'm going to go with Queen Latifah. And don't tell me nothing else about her. That's my choice. Mr. Hines, I'm experiencing you, bro. But
I
want
I got
you back
one.
To you. I'm not going to answer
one.
The question. Are you, okay, all right. What you got?
Hey, I'm going to take y'all back. And, hey, she done had my heart since way back in the day. Thelma from Good Times, and she's still cold.
Whoa.
Still
yeah.
bad.
Goodness, bro. Yeah, yeah. You don't take it to a new level there. Gentlemen, we'll get together soon.